Do you want to move this? Can we move that thing? Can we move this screen?
And that's cool.
Okay, should we get started? Yeah? Bismillah, walhamdulillah, wassalatu wassalam ala rasulillah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. So, we're on hadith number 3. People want to pull it up on their phones, laptops, whatever you have. If you have actual text too, you can just type in like Nawawi hadith 3 or Imam Nawawi's hadith number 3. So we can pull it up. As we mentioned, we want to try to also start to memorize these hadith in their entirety or parts of the hadith as best as we can. So they start to become not just things that we know, but things that we're acting upon or building relationships with. Right? So innama al-amalu bin-niyat was the first hadith. Indeed, actions are by their intentions. The second hadith, the hadith Jibra'il. The angel Gabriel comes, asks questions of the Prophet alayhi salam, is giving a lot of etiquette in terms of like a student-teacher dynamic. And then this third hadith that we're looking at is just focused on like the foundational rituals and practices in Islam, right? Bunya al-Islam ala khams, that Islam is built upon five things. And then talks about the shahada, the prayers, giving charity, the pilgrimage, and fasting in Ramadan. And so last week, we focused a lot on just the first part, the Shahada, and what are the conditions of the Shahada in terms of like knowing what it means, having faith in its meaning, affirming it through acceptance, love, you know, these kinds of things. People remember what I'm talking about? Yeah, great. And then what does that mean from the standpoint of La ilaha illallah, that there's nothing worthy of worship except Allah, and then Muhammad Rasulullah, and that Muhammad is the messenger of God. And so we want to get into the latter part of the hadith now that looks at these remaining four foundational pillars, and trying to understand and extrapolate meaning from the hadith in ways that allow for us to think about it through the hadith's illustration in and of itself, as a literal foundation upon which everything else is built upon. It's not saying exhaustively that there's an equal sign between this and Islam as a religion, but this is the basis of it. And without this, you can't have anything built upon the foundation if there's no foundation to begin with. Right? And the Shahada was that main kind of pillar that everything comes into, that if you don't have an affirmation of these two theologies, a very pure monotheism and the acceptance of prophethood and finality of prophethood in the Prophet Muhammad, then these other things are not done within the course of Islam. You need to have those two things in order to be able to then engage these other aspects in a more meaningful way. Right, and last week we also talked about briefly who Abdullah ibn Umar radiallahu anhumah is, Abdullah the son of Umar ibn al-Khattab. So today we'll start by talking about these other parts to the hadith, the salah, the zakah, the hajj, and the siyam, the fast of Ramadan, and try to see where there's room to actualize and engage in these things, right? Can somebody read the hadith in its entirety, in English or in Arabic? Why are you smiling? You're trying to avoid reading? You're a grown woman. You're not in, like, fifth grade. This isn't, like, class you're going to get called on. You know what I mean? Somebody want to read it? Can someone read it? They're waiting for you, see?
Yeah, I'll read it.
Cool.
Islam is built upon the authority of Abdullah ibn Umar ibn al-Khattab. May Allah be pleased with him. He said, I heard the messenger of Allah, peace be upon him, say, Islam has been built on five pillars, testifying that there is no God but Allah, and that Muhammad is the messenger of Allah, performing the prayers, praying, paying the zakah, making the pilgrimage to the house, and fasting in Ramadan.
Great. So we want to nuance the meaning of this. Can somebody read the Arabic? Just for the barakah of it. The blessing of it. Yeah. Because don't volunteer all at once. So. Okay. So the hadith says, أن أبي عبد الرحمن عبد الله بن عمر بن الخطاب رضي الله عنهما قال سمعت رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم يقول بني الإسلام على خمس شهادة أن لا إله إلا الله وأن محمد رسول الله وإقام الصلاة وإيتاء الزكاة وحج البيت وصوم رمضان رواه البخاري ومسلم. Right, and the hadith is as was read. So here now, as we're looking at this, the Arabic is iqam as-salah. It's not talking about the doers of prayer, right? It doesn't say the musallin, but it's talking about the establishment of prayer. So in Arabic, for example, when we pray at night in Ramadan, a lot of you have come when we've done like the grand qiyam programs here, right? We get 1,000+ people on the 10th floor of the room in the building next door. We pray from Isha till Fajr time, trying to seek out Laylatul Qadr, the night of power, the night of destiny. May Allah make us from those who witness it and benefit from it. So that standing in the night is called Qiyamul Layl, the standing in the night, right? So you have like the same root here in Iqama, when it says in this establishment of the prayer. So you're literally conceptualizing this now. In the establishment of the prayer, you're kind of trying to make the prayer upright. And so how do you reinforce this? And we want to think about this in terms of attaching meaning not just to salah as a practice or an exercise, but everything that surrounds it. And if you were to think about this in a more kind of literal example, if you guys took, any of you, the class we did on the how-tos of prayer in the summer, like the fiqh of prayer, the do's and don'ts, according to the Hanafi school, we talked about what does it mean to like establish prayer in that sense. So it's about the establishment of it as outward and inward aspects of it, not just the mechanics, but that's part of it, the postures, the mechanics, the standing, the bowing, the kneeling, the prostrating, but also presence, focus, these kinds of things. And so when you're thinking about making the prayer upright, right, how do you establish it in the sense that it's upright? The example I used in the summer is if you're ever walking through Manhattan and you ever see these little trees that have just been planted, that they fundamentally cannot stand on their own. So there's usually like a stick in the middle of it that the tree is braced upon. Does anybody know what I'm talking about? Right? If you walk down the sidewalk, because we live in New York City, so we're not surrounded by heavily forested areas, somebody's trying to plant something new, and it's just in a nascent stage as a sapling of a tree, it could be knocked down by severe weather, rainstorm, you know, winds that are heavy, etc. So what they do is if they have like the tree, there's essentially what looks like a small broomstick that's in the middle of it that the tree gets reinforced around so that it's able to sustain itself, right? That piece of wood that is helping for the tree to stay upright, that's the idea that you are reinforcing your prayer so that it is staying kind of upright. And so that can't be done just through the postures in and of itself, because it's super easy to go through just the mechanics, right? As you get the hang of it, it can become a habituated action. Do you know? Standing, bowing, kneeling, prostrating, you're just going through it. And you think about the things you can do with mindlessness. Do you know what I mean? People are taking a shower and they're singing. You can do those two things at one time, right? You're exercising and you're listening to something. Do you know? You can do those two things simultaneously. There's certain things you cannot do simultaneously where you are really in danger if you're driving and trying to text on your phone. Do you know what I mean? You can't fundamentally be talking to someone and listening to someone else talk at the same time. It just doesn't work, right? If you guys are talking to each other, you might hear ambient noise around you, but the ability to speak and listen simultaneously is not just something that we're wired to do, do you know? So the challenge with the mechanics is that you can actually start to be in prayer and the postures physically while you're doing something else. Do you know? You are able to be present in the physical sense, but mentally you are elsewhere. You're praying with your body, but not with your heart. There could be different things going on, right? Like, I've used this example before. My son is 8 years old. He just turned 8. But if you've ever prayed next to this kid, he can do like 50 things while he's praying. You know, in Ramadan, he put a juice box in front of him, straws popping out. He went down to bow, stood up. And then when he went to prostrate, whenever he prostrated, he took a sip out of the juice box, right? But he's a little kid. He's still figuring out what it means. He's doing these things simultaneously. You can't eat and pray, not just because eating is not allowed when you pray, but the function of eating while you pray would take away from the focus in the prayer. Does that make sense? So when we're thinking about it, we want to think about it holistically. What is it that I'm doing to reinforce it the way that sapling is reinforced by the pole in its nascent stage of being a tree? Do you get what I mean? And how am I doing that outwardly and inwardly by attaching meaning to this? So I want us to think about with a few prompts around this that allow for us to understand in a broader sense from everyone's experiences, certain things around this ritual and practice that enables us to think out then, why do I leave it behind? You know, and we could have this as a conversation in a few different ways where I could tell you first to talk to each other about why is it that we don't pray all of our prayers on time? But that's not the way we want to approach it initially. But that's the conversation you want to have within yourself. To think about it objectively, what gets in the way, but more so from start to finish, thinking about it in different ways so that I can now actualize for myself a sense of, well, what am I giving up when I don't do it like this, right? And being creative in thinking about, like, what's the benefit of having a direction that you pray in? What are some of the yields that you get from that? What's the benefit of having a congregational prayer? What are some of the things that you can draw from this? Do you see what I mean? right? And you can think about it from various ways just to give you ideas as we're kind of talking some of this out, right? Like if you have a congregational prayer, you don't have position in a prayer that is deemed based off of social class or affluence or wealth. You stand where you stand based off of the time you get to the prayer. And it's not about religiosity or practice, but or level of observance, so to speak. But anybody can stand wherever fundamentally in the prayer. There's some parameters to it. It's also you're standing with people in gatherings that you don't necessarily see too much of, either personally or professionally. Do you know? I mean, I'm sitting and looking in a room right now that's got brown people, white people, black people, people who are different in their age, people who come from different professional ambitions, people who have likely different politics, different this and different that. You're situated in a moment deliberately that has you engage diversity at times that you, other than that moment, are not in that. Do you see what I'm saying? And if you reflect on, like, what are the gains of these things? What are the things that have for me and my capacity and ability to then reinforce the way that that tree is reinforced by that stick? I'm not just thinking about it from the performance of just going up and down and up and down, but I'm enabling myself outwardly and inwardly to harness from it what it uniquely can offer to me by reinforcing and establishing it upright in this way. Does this make sense? So I'm going to throw out a few things to you all. You don't want to only speak if you're saying the right thing or avoid saying something because you feel like it's wrong. Nor do you want to think about this at a level that says somebody else can give more input on it than I could. But just for us to have an exercise that you continue on with when you go home. Because there's no way we can go through every aspect of it, but we can go through some of it to think out. Like, what's the benefit of saying Allahu Akbar so many times in the prayer, right? Why is there a gain for us to be gazing like where we're going to be prostrating in the prayer? Do you know what I mean? But you start to think about it, reflect upon it, so that it's not just mechanical. And this is why it's important to understand that this is a hadith about Islam. And when you have these slogans around Islam as a religion, Islam does not mean the word peace the way like 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago, a bunch of people would say this is what it means. Islam means submission. Like, that's what it means. So submission, the hadith is saying, is built upon five things, right? And submission to who? Submission to the divine, submission to the shahada. And a key factor to it is this, the establishment of prayer. And why we want to think about it more deeply is because we're pretty much given everything that we have to get ready for. So if you remember in hadith number 2, we talked about a system, right? Akhbirni an al-Islam. What is Islam? It gives you something to do, the religion. Akhbirni an al-Iman. What is Iman? This religion gives you something to believe in. Akhbirni an al-Ihsan. What is Ihsan? It gives you something to embody. Tell me of the hour, right? It gives you something to get ready for. So as you leave from the shahada to this second category in this hadith, the prayer, the salah, is what we're taught is the first thing we're going to be questioned about on the day of judgment. May Allah grant us ease on that day, right? But it's not like to catch you off guard, right? It's there. You're told this is the first thing you're going to be asked about. You're not asked about, like, other things. The first thing everyone is asked about is their salah. They're not going to be asked about, like, how much money you had, what degree you had, did you get married, did you have babies. The first thing you're going to be asked about is your salah. What the hadith says, if it's good, then everything that comes after is good. If it's not good, everything else that comes out, not good, right? But if the salah is good, it's established, right? It's not just prayed. It's established. It's meant to then be transformational as a spiritual exercise. So somebody who's like really praying, they're not going to be a jerk. Do you get what I mean? There's connection between what you're doing in the prayer and outside of the prayer. If it's observed in that way, you're not going to think about somebody who is really on top of praying Fajr as being somebody who's abusive to their kids. Then there's something wrong with their prayer. They're not doing it right. Do you know? It's not being done well. Does that make sense? So here we want to think about it in these frames. So as a starting point in the establishment of this, just starting to incentivize for ourselves, right? So what I'd love for you to do is to think out like benefits of these things and also think out where it might be hard so that you can think about things not just as like absolute good and bad, but identifying where are the obstacles, what's the struggle with it. So if you can turn to the persons next to you, introduce some names. One of the things that comes within the establishment of prayer, not just praying, is praying it in its window of time, right? Fajr is prayed at Fajr time. Fajr is not prayed at Maghrib time. Fajr is prayed at Fajr time. Dhuhr is prayed at Dhuhr. Asr is prayed at Asr. Maghrib at Maghrib. Isha at Isha. What are the benefits to me as an individual to actually stick to the windows of time? What is it doing for me if I am sticking to the windows of time? Does that make sense, the question? What's the gain with it? And then thinking out also, what comes up that makes it hard, that makes it a struggle sometimes? Do you know what I mean? Because there's books that people have written, right? There's a Turkish scholar who wrote a book that was premised off of the idea, not about why is it hard to get up for Fajr, but why is it hard for some people to get up for Dhuhr and Asr? When they're sitting at like an office desk, it's a lot more difficult to get up in the middle of the day for those prayers than it is when you're at home, like getting out of bed, do you know? But you want to be able to confront what the obstacle is, especially amongst people who get it. So then you can start to distill, well, how do I kind of take it on and understand it vis-a-vis the benefits? Because you can't benefit from the good you don't do. Do you know what I mean? And you have to individually build a relationship with this. Bunya al-Islam ala khams is also talking about that this is your individual obligation. You can't pray my prayer. I can't pray your prayer. Some of these things we could do for others, right? You could theoretically perform hajj on behalf of someone else if you've done that for yourself. And we'll talk about that when we get to that part. But some of this is just you. Like, you got to fast your fast. I can't fast your fast. You can't fast my fast. Do you know what I mean? So if you turn to the person next to you, just as one of the starting points, what's some of the benefit of actually having a regimented time structure to our prayers? What do I gain from it as an individual if I stick to it? And what are some of the things that make it a little bit difficult to stick to it? So we can talk about that for a few minutes, then we'll come back and we'll move on. But go ahead.
Hold on.
Okay, so what are some of the things coming up? Like, why would this be a beneficial thing to have these windows of time in which we do this? Yeah.
So me and Rita talked about it, and one of the things that we came up with was it's an identity for the ummah. It's something that separates a person who's Muslim or following the faith from someone who's not a Muslim, because all the Muslims will pray on the same time. It's also like something that gives balance. Like, salat, like praying on time gives more balance to your life, so you're not just focusing just on your deen and just forgetting all about dunya, or you're just focusing on dunya and forgetting all about deen. It's like something, it's like a reminder, you do it at a certain time, and then it can go back to like your other affairs. And then just like discipline, you know, like Islam is all about discipline, having like a certain like habit, routine, even when we're praying, you know, making sure that our rows are straight, like Islam focuses heavily on that.
Amazing. Other thoughts? Yeah.
I was talking about the idea of help me organize my day. I was talking about, like, you know, trying to go to the gym after Fajr, like trying to eat lunch after planning my days around it. Like those, like my the breaks in my day, and then things, certain things happen in certain windows, either before or after, makes a lot. So like that's like helping organize my day.
Okay. Anything else? Yeah.
Also keep away from sin, like if you are gonna pray in an hour, you're not gonna go drink because you can't drink and pray at the same time.
Okay. Other thoughts? Yeah.
Well, we talked a little bit about Fajr specifically, because what's special about Fajr is that obviously Fajr starts at the first break of dawn and then it ends at sunrise, so you're gonna be waking up at that point, right? And so, because it's required at such an early time, it means the first thing you're doing when you wake up is you're remembering Allah, correct? And so, that kind of just sets the whole day into motion, you know? In the sense that you start with Allah, how are you going to falter along the path? And then we were also talking about how, like, if you're struggling with... Oh, this is something that a brother of mine had told me, is that I was telling him about, like, a certain sin that I might have been struggling with, and he said... Well, have you been doing your salah? And I just realized that kind of like completely shifted my mentality to the point where, oh, I was thinking so much, oh, I have to stop doing this, I have to stop doing this, I have to stop doing this. But really, once you start praying, it's kind of like, it is magical in a sense, the way that, like, because now your days are centered around Allah 5 times a day. How are you going to like falter from that in a sense? Like, obviously, we all will falter, but like, it definitely is like a rock. It is like a fortifying part of the deen, I suppose. That's
yeah.
Why it's like one of the pillars.
You're gonna say something?
I think it's also like an opportunity for like mindfulness, just being able to like take a break from the daily routine of the day, because I feel like I don't really think of like having to do self-care, but it's, you actually think about the meaning of like the prayer and like what you're saying, I feel like it's a way to kind of have like some mindfulness and deep thoughts.
Great. What gets in the way? What makes it hard?
Yeah, routine days, routine lifestyle. So, if you're in a business, so they don't really understand most of the case that you have to leave what you're doing at the same at that time. So you have to go and just pray and then come back. It is very rare that, especially your employee understand that.
Okay. You work for people who are not Muslim and they don't get it. Other things?
I think if you make a commitment to God at a certain time each day to pray, it also helps making you good commitments with other, your spouse or your job or your deadlines.
Yeah.
It even impacts your whole life.
Yeah, definitely. Other thoughts? Things that get in the way or why there's a benefit to this? Yeah.
Something about the benefit. I think we discussed about how at least praying 5 times a day or praying like 2 times a day is like a good checkpoint. It's like, you know, you're experiencing God, you're experiencing religion at different stages of your day. So if you have like, say, a big meeting or like an exam that you have, Fajr might be very stressful. Like you're asking, then you're done with the exam, you're just like the meeting's gone and stuff. Zuhur be more celebratory, or like, you know, thankfulness. Just like checking in at different points and just like, you know, experiencing different emotions throughout the day with God. If it was reduced to, let's say, 1 day a week, then you wouldn't really be present in all those emotions and experiencing the best religion and God the same way.
Right, and we want to have this conversation because as you get older, consciousness just kind of arises, but it doesn't mean you utilize it. Is there, doesn't mean you do, right? Like, we have a lot of faculties that we don't fundamentally use, do you know? I went on a hike in Southern Virginia on the weekend, and this guy was walking with me down the mountain, you know, the whole way. And he was like, man, he's like, I just realized how out of shape I am, because it's just hard. You know, the poor guy was breathing heavy and it was really tough, but he was seeing it in the sense of he has something and he doesn't use it. And now when he's engaged in it, it's making him realize if he doesn't use it, he's going to lose it even more, right? So just because you have it doesn't mean you use it. You have spiritual gifts that God has endowed you with. You have capacities that you've been gifted and given. Doesn't mean that because I have it, I'm using it necessarily. Do you know? And so to hear, it's applicable in these ways that it's there, but it doesn't mean that I necessarily have attached like intentionality and meaning to it. So I can do my prayer or I can be experiencing it, right? And there's a nuanced difference there, right? Am I just getting it done or is it actually something I'm experiencing in some capacity? And I have to distill for myself now through the utilization of consciousness and reflection, like, hey, what is it that is important here? What is that's being derived from here? And all of these things make sense. And we could probably come up with a whole another list of things, right? Discipline, very important. If you can learn how to manage time, you will learn how to manage yourself. And most of us spend tons of time just doing nonsense, do you know? Right? And that becomes a challenge. So you get to a space where there's a lot of objectives and goals. It's like, well, how do you achieve in certain capacities? If you say to yourself, I don't have time for something, you're saying it's not important to me. So you say yes to something, you're inevitably saying no to something else. Here, if you're saying no to the performance of this thing, then you're telling yourself it's not as important as whatever I'm doing, and it's time, right? And some of it is hard. Like, it's not easy. You get into a place where you get used to a certain frame of existence. It's exhausting waking up at certain hours. Like, you know, it's warm under your covers in the winter. But acknowledging what gets in the way and juxtaposing it to what the benefit is, you will not derive what you can from praying five times a day on time as that you would get from not praying it on time. So it's given as an exercise in a certain way, and attaching to it this sense of intentionality that says, here's where the gains are. Here's where the losses are. Here's where I gain from not doing it. Are the gains that I gain from not doing it at all or not doing it on time worth it in comparison to what I'm giving up by not doing it on time? Do you understand the framing? And you can't believe it because I believe it, just as much as I can't believe it because you believe it. Because belief is in your heart. This is why, like a lot of people, when they're in college, for example, they're on point with their religion in certain ways because they're surrounded by a lot of Muslim people in a community like ours, right? And we're blessed, alhamdulillah, that some of you aren't students here and you still get to be in this space. I'm not a student. I've been here forever, do you know? But now when you leave from that space and you're out in the workplace and you're the only person, if it's not an inwardly established practice, it becomes very easy to let go of it, right? I don't know how to ask my boss for something because I've never thought about it before in that way. Like, what does it mean to me? What is it that I'm actually letting go of here? And if I'm letting go of burdensome obligation or something that's distraction, it's the thing that makes it hard for me to watch an entire game and its duration because Maghrib came in the way or Isha, or I'm watching a Broadway show and I got to figure out how to pray in the middle of it because the window of time for Maghrib is less, or I'm out with somebody at a restaurant and I don't want to leave. Like, you're telling yourself why it's not important at that point in time, which is not a good or a bad. It's just understanding it objectively so you know about yourself through it. And then you think about these other things that are there. All of this has to get informed by that first part, which is shahada. And the conditions of the shahada are not just knowing what it means, but also believing in it and accepting in it and understanding all of the other things that we said were conditions in it. So you don't have to understand, but God in his infinite wisdom decreed that these are the best times to perform this prayer in. Do you see what I mean? And all that other stuff, right? It does inform it. If you can stay committed to something, like consistently, it's going to bleed into other habits that you have. I have students that go to this school. They have no anxiety because they do what Saad was saying. They work their day around their prayers. And so they're up at Fajr and then they study after Fajr. Like they wake up and they wake up to stay up. They don't wake up to go to sleep. And so they're in a place where they're studying at that time, maybe take a nap in the middle of the day. I get more work done. People say, how do you do all of these things? It's not a secret, man, right? I get more work done from like 5:30 in the morning till 8 in the morning than I would if I started working at 9 a.m. until like 5 or 6 p.m., do you know? And I love sleeping, do you know what I mean? I love to eat and I love to sleep. And sleep even more than eating. I really enjoy sleeping. It's amazing, alhamdulillah. It's not like an either or. You can orient these things, but a missing ingredient in the establishment of it, the establishment of the salah, and a key part in the establishment of the salah, you pray at the times that Allah and his messenger told you to pray, not when you feel like praying. This is not a knock on anybody who's struggling with their prayers. For a good chunk of my teens, I did not pray five times a day. And I can tell you the joy I felt when I started to pray five times a day, not just from the experience of five prayers in a day, but because I overcame it and I can understand where I came from as a necessary part in tasting more sweetly prayer now in the ways that I have a relation to it. Don't hate on yourself. Like, you gotta start someplace. Do you know what I mean? But there's a difference between saying I'm starting or I'm struggling versus I just don't do it. And I'm saying a part of the reason why you don't do it or establish it is because you never thought about what the gains are from it, the benefit from it. Discipline is really key because discipline isn't about, hey, I'm going to do it because I'm worshiping the feeling. Discipline is I get it done even when I don't want to get it done. You all ask me a lot about my relationship with my kids. I love my children. But even when I'm exhausted and I get home, I'm still going to hang out with them and smile and play. The discipline I derive from being committed to my practice helps me to be in discipline of myself in these moments when I have to do things and push myself when I'm running on empty. It's not just like, here's this ritual, and then there's no bleeding into the rest of your life. There's not secrets. Do you know what I mean? And Allah wires you in this way that you're going to worship something. So you're getting up and going to bed for some reason. Is it worth it? Like the reason that you are orienting kind of your sleep schedule around, your eating habits, like all this kind of stuff. Do you know? Like, what do you gain from that? And you see, right? That people are showing you right now who worship money. Like they worship dollars. What that translates to in terms of their ethics and their morals and their character and belief. They're killing babies and they don't even care. So you attach these things together. And so that's one bucket, right? The timings of it. And you go home and think about it a little bit more. Hey, what am I giving up? And think broadly, like, what do I gain? You gain a little bit more sleep. That's true, right? You don't have to deny that. Is gaining that sleep worth it in comparison to what you're giving up on the gains from staying commitment to the regimen? Does that make sense? And you, like, sit and think and reflect upon it. Do you know what I mean? Okay, so we want to think about this in other facets also. Right? Like, we could go through a bunch of different things. What is the benefit of having a Qibla? What is the benefit of making wudu before you pray? What is the benefit of making sure that the space you pray in is clean? That the clothes you're wearing are actually clothes that you should be praying in, right? that everything is covered that's supposed to be covered. Not in like an elementary Sunday school type thing. Nobody's judging you here. This has positives and negatives. Do you get what I mean? Because even if somebody is just a self-righteous, like, fool in your face, like, this isn't covered properly, why is this sticking out? They're still engaging you in instruction sometimes on things that you still necessarily need to hear, right? And may Allah make us those who are willing to take instruction. The Rever means he gives it to us. But when you're in a space where people are kind and gentle, sometimes also it's hard to be taught certain things. And it can build up now a defensive reaction to things that you don't even have to defend yourself from. Do you know? So just in a lump bucket, before we're even talking about getting into prayer, there's all these things that happen before you start to pray. In the establishment of the prayer, right? Iqam as-salah, that you are in this place where you're establishing. You're not just praying. You're not just standing randomly, right? I'm going to pray towards Mexico today. I'm going to pray towards California today, right? No, you pray towards Mecca. Why? Why is this a benefit? So think now on whatever of these conditions that are prior to the prayer. Wudu, the clothing that you're wearing, the direction of the prayer, the cleanliness of the space, the time of the prayer coming in. Like, what are the advantages of this? What are the gains? You don't have to talk about all of them, but just pick one and talk to the persons next to you. Like, why is there gain to this? What are the benefits of some of these things that I derive? And then we'll come back and discuss, but go ahead.
Yeah, it's like, almost the
I think it's better Looking at the same generation, why we are all here. So it is a very important
question.
Okay, so what are some of the things we're talking about? What's coming up for people? Like on these other parts to this, Qibla, like wudu, the clothes you wear, you know, all this stuff. What's like the benefit to this? Are there? Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Other thoughts?
Well, it's actually for the also there's always a mystical part of it, but you also think about how practical it makes for your life too. So I was telling him that I didn't really think about why we're always facing to Mecca all the time, but now while we're discussing it, yeah, there's a logic behind it, because if it should be like that, because otherwise when you're in together with everybody and praying, so he maybe say that, okay, today I want to just turn my back and just want to pray like this. So it is for the order, actually. So like everything. So when you think about it in Islam, you should also think there is the mystical part and there is the logical part. So everything is for some has a logic. So if you really understand the logic behind it, what we are doing, then it is, I think it is easier for you to do it.
Yeah.
Not only for mystical.
Yeah, exactly. Other thoughts? Yeah.
Well, about the Qibla being in Mecca, there's this ayah in Surah Al-Baqarah, ayah 144. We have been seeing you turning your face to the heavens, so we'll certainly assign to you a Qibla that you will like. So by our iman, by our loving of the Prophet, we should love the same things as him, alayhi salatu wasalam. So this is like the incident that changed it. I don't want to spoil your Sierra series.
No, it's okay. it's okay, no worries.
Yeah, this is the pinpoint where the Qibla changed from Masjid al-Aqsa to Masjid to Mecca. So yeah, as we are loving the same thing as our Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam, we should love to have that Qibla too.
Yeah, amazing. Other thoughts on any of it? Yeah.
And this is like for all the requirements, I think maybe it's like the way human beings are designed, that having like those requirements signifies that aspect of our life. Even like in the secular world, like if it's an important event or something important, there are like certain, almost like rituals about it, certain requirements that people follow, and it signifies that thing in their life. So I think having that for the salah also like makes it a significant aspect of our life, rather than just something we just do.
Yeah, and you want to think, right? All of us is present in this prayer, so it's a very cerebral activity. There's a hadith that says, "Ad-du'a mukh al-ibadah," the du'a is the essence of worship. But the word mukh in Arabic is not essence, you know, in that sense. It's referring more to kind of like your nervous system. Do you know what I mean? So it's denoting this idea that this is a cerebral action. So if I'm now starting my day out and I got to plan out this stuff, I'm bringing presence into it. What time do I have to go to bed in order to wake up to pray Fajr? Do you ever think about it for yourself? Do you know what I mean? And then why am I going to bed after that time? But just as a conversation point to like think within yourself, or you're up in the morning or the night before, you have to have designated parts of your day or your week where there's reflection, right? When we were doing the Book of Assistance, we talked about the Wird and Imam al-Haddad in like the categories of this daily litany, the subtopics he talks about is reciting Quran every day, like some part of Quran. You got to engage it on a daily basis, right? Fiqh, he says, reflection is also needing to be done with regularity in a 24-hour time period, right? So that contemplation is important. And reflection is not in a vacuum, it's upon something. So the night before, I'm thinking about the day that I just had transpire upon me, or the day ahead, or in the morning, I'm thinking about what's going to happen. And I got to like figure out, hey, I'm going to be on a plane to Roanoke, Virginia. Like, how do I pray? What direction am I praying in? You know what I mean? I went on Friday night on this little plane to Southern Virginia. And they asked me when I got there, have you ever been here before? And I said, yeah, I remember. Because the last time I flew out here, it was the worst plane ride I've ever had in my life. So this tiny plane, it's got like single seats on it. And whenever the wind blows, you just go all over the place because nobody's flying to Roanoke, Virginia, except me. And I flew from Roanoke And then this weekend, it was New York to Roanoke to Atlanta to Detroit back to New York. Right? Yeah. Friday night to Sunday night. I have to have a mindfulness strategy around where am I praying? What am I wearing in this thing? Do you know? What's the direction? Where am I making wudu? You know how annoying it would be if I only thought about it while I was in it? And then I'm creating anxiety around it. If you go to work and you're the only Muslim and it's already tough, well, I'll make it easy. And then when you're there, you're trying to figure out, like, hey, is this classroom empty? Is this stairwell empty? Is this all? You're bringing anxiety to an act that's meant to create rest. So the consciousness of it, it yields presence in the planning. You have a checkbox that is increasing now taqwa. And it's allowing for you to say, hey, am I wearing what I can to pray while I'm in the office? I'm on this plane. Like, what am I going to do? Right? Like, wudu. You know, I don't know if you've ever flown on a plane and tried to make wudu in the plane bathroom. Unless you're flying, like, business class or first class, where the bathrooms are bigger than the economy's, like, seat. Right? But if you're flying on a plane that's just a regular plane... This plane to Roanoke, Virginia did not have a giant bathroom in it. Do you know? It had a bathroom that was like very tiny. And there's no way you can maneuver without like hitting something or bonking against something. Do you know what I mean? So if I'm running late to my flight or I'm eating something that I know is going to break my wudu, I'm in a place where I don't have awareness of my entire physical being. Right? And it's not like meant to be a joke. You're going to have it happen. I take people for Umrah every year, Umrah and Hajj, and I tell them, hey man, don't be eating KFC 24/7 because when we're on Umrah, you are going to be so upset that you cannot keep your wudu, right? It'll be farting all over the place. You know what's going on, right? So you got to bring some self-awareness into this. Why am I going to make my life miserable? And then the option is what? Maybe I just won't pray? No, it takes 5 minutes of deliberation using the intellect that the divine has endowed you with to shift a paradigm and to think out, I know what this day ahead of me is going to be. And here are the windows of time in which I will need to pray. So what are the things that I have to do to ready myself for those things so that they're actually an oasis in the midst of a very heavy experience, that they're not adding more chaos and anxiety in a world that's already agitating and distracting. Do you know what I mean? And if you're bringing it to it, you've already kind of mapped it out, you know? Like sometimes when I go to a wedding or to speak in a place I've not spoken before, I'll go to see the room beforehand. Because I got to visualize everything in my head. It's not easy, right? To stand in front of people. Some of you come to Jummah here. Standing in front of 800 people and teaching them about life is a very anxiety-inducing experience. Do you know? If you've ever been on a stage, you're a performer, you're an artist, you know what I'm talking about. So you can acquaint yourself now a little bit more by acclimating yourself to the environment. If you don't have a plan and you're already helter-skelter, it's not going to like make it easier, right? And these are not things to create judgment against oneself or weaponize to like police somebody else's kind of ritual and practice, but it's for yourself. Like, hey, am I actually dressed the way I'm supposed to be dressed when I'm standing in front of the divine? Are things covered the way they're supposed to be covered for women and men, right? It's not just about like, hey, you know, his hair tucked under a hijab. There's like a ton of brothers who their pants are not where they're supposed to be when they're prostrating in the world, right? Allah make it easy. But that's something that's important to understand. You woke up in the morning. Did you not think you were going to pray today? And like you decided not to wear a belt, right? And then you have to think when there's chaos inwardly, that's what you're giving credence to in comparison to your salah. that I'd rather not have this thing around my waist, and then the mechanics of it are not observed with consciousness, then you're going to get out of it what you put into it. Do you see what I'm saying? And so we can distill this in every which way possible, right? What is like the advantage of saying Allahu Akbar as you are going through these motions of prayer? What is like the gain of reciting Fatiha in every single rak'ah of every prayer, right? Reflection, contemplation, so that the establishment of it is not nonsensical. Do you get what I mean? If you were walking down the street and you saw this sapling of a tree, and instead of the pole going up holding it, the tree was still up, but somebody tied the pole going this way. And it wasn't creating balance, it was creating heaviness on the tree. And you'd be like, what guy did this? That doesn't make any sense. Do you know? Then don't do that to your salah. You're putting it out of whack when it's not established firmly. And the crazy thing is, it doesn't take a lot to establish it firmly. And when you are in places that you frequent regularly, and you can create a sense of how to do this in those spaces, in the places that are unfamiliar, it's going to be a little bit less anxiety-inducing. Because your regular norm is going to be, I know how to get it done. So I'll figure out ways to do it. And that's just sometimes how you got to approach it. Do you know? And the fulfillment of the obligation in the window of time is what the priority is. Not like how deeply spiritually moving it was. Was I able to recite? Yeah, 10, 20 seconds, just Surah Kauthar, Surah Ikhlas. You get it done. You just got to get it done. But it gets done in the window of time. The other parts to the establishment of it, you learn like the fiqh of the prayer, the mechanics, the do's and don'ts. If you are going to teach somebody how to pray, you have to learn how to also teach the prayer, which is not just about I pray so I know how to teach it. That's like saying I eat so I know how to like teach people how to cook. That's not how it works, right? We get like 5 people a week who come here to take their shahada, mashallah. You cannot tell somebody who's a new Muslim from the minute now the prayer is like incumbent upon them that they have to pray in that final form of prayer that you are used to praying. There's like entire processes to be able to teach the fara'id, the wajibat, the sunan of the prayers. Do you know? So understanding it individually and then communally, where's the responsibilities? Do you see what I mean? And this is about like the establishment of it. All of this goes into the establishment. And then the inward parts to it as well. At some point, you got to learn what Fatiha means. And it doesn't take like hours to learn what it means. Not just the translation in antiquated language. It's recitation and all of this is included, but also like its meaning. Like, what is it telling me? What is it bringing me towards? There's got to be something in it that it's been ordained to be recited this many times. At a minimum, you're saying it's 17 times a day. Like, why? What is it about? Do you know? When you get to a place where you can taste some of this inwardly, you just want to know more. Do you know? So you want to, like, read more. The commentaries, the explanations. You turn to your friends sometimes and say, hey, man, what does it mean to you? Allah is Ar-Rahman. You start to actualize a relationship with these things by actualizing, like, the names of the divine. If Allah is good, then what we know of Allah to be is also good. So if God is good and God is merciful, then being merciful is good. So what do you do to put rahmah into the world? You make this dua every day. Then a sirat al-mustaqim. Like, why? And as I have evolution in my life, every day is not the same. So I'm in a constant state of needing this, right? And hidayah in Arabic, like guidance, is rooted in the same root as hadiya, like a gift, right? So this notion is like, this is something that's actually gifted. You know, it's got that kind of connotation to it. I don't want to be in a state of just loss. I want awareness. I want consciousness. You know, I don't want to just know where the path is. Like, that's just why. Do you know what I mean? Like, oh, if Thar is there, just stare at it. You know? No. Like, we don't set it up so you know it's there and you look at it. You go and you eat the food. Right? So, ihdina siratul mustaqim, you go and you walk on the path after you see it. You get the guidance and you do something with it. Right? But you reflect on these different things. What is like the gain of a bowing position or a prostrating position? Like, what is it doing for me, these different things? Do you see what I'm saying? And then beyond the fara'id, like the sunnahs, praying the extra prayers, and then thinking about it also from what does the Quran and the hadith say? And definitively, the hadith tells us these extra prayers, they're just about love. Building love. In various ways. Because it's very different when you have to do something versus when you want to do something. And then you want to do also the things you don't have to do. You just do it because you do it because you love to do it. Do you know? Do you get what I mean? Okay, so iqam as-salah, like this is where it goes. And the hadith is really clear on this. It's the first thing we're asked about. Allah grant us ease in that questioning. You just try your best. If you're not down with like any of it right now, just start with like one a day. Do what you can and focus on it. If you got one down, do two, do three. You get to five, then start adding your sunnahs to it. Do you know? But with a recognition that you want to reflect on it. There's going to be some days when you pray and it's just going to be going through the motions. That's just how it's going to be. You still got to do it. There's going to be some days where, like, you feel just, I don't want to stop praying. You still just got to do it the way you do it on the days that that feeling's not there. Do you see what I'm saying? And intellectualizing it, I'm not a bad person. Yeah, you're not a bad person. Nobody's saying you're a bad person. But this is like a part of this religion. And it's not enough to say, like, it's just about my heart or I'm a good person. There's a lot of good people in the world. Like, nobody's saying you're a bad person. There's a lot of people who pray their prayers and they're idiots. They are not good human beings, right? Allah forgive them and forgive all of us. That's not what it is. But you engage it for your own kind of transformation. Do you see? So you're establishing it. And the establishment of it, it needs, like, strategy. It needs plans. You got hecticness, it's still got to like work out in certain ways. And that's where fiqh is a spiritual activity because you can now maneuver through situations that allow for you to be adaptable in certain ways, right? I wear my Tims a lot and people say, why do you wear these boots all the time? You know, you're such a New Yorker. I like my boots. That's why I wear them. But also, like there's different opinions on wiping over socks and wiping over other stuff. When I'm traveling, I don't wipe over my socks. I'm happy to explain this to people. Like, I'm not saying you should or you shouldn't, but in kind of across the board, if you have a device that is known to be a shoe, right? So you can't have something you just throw on your foot that's not a shoe, but like something that's a shoe. It's going above your ankle. There's no perforations in it. You can walk a distance in it without it tearing, etc. Like, you can wipe over this after you've made wudu. So when I'm on this mini plane to Roanoke, Virginia, and there's no way I can fundamentally, I could be the most like stretchy human being in the world. There's no way my foot is getting in this sink. Like, it's just not possible, right? How the way this bathroom is shaped. I got these boots on, I can wipe over them. I'm dressing for my prayer. I'm not dressing for vanity. Do you get what I mean? Does that make sense? And it lessens the anxiety, you know? You're gonna go sledding in the winter. I had students who reach out. They're in Central Park. Maghrib is like finishing. And they're like, what do we do? Like, we gotta make wudu. And there's snow all around them. You can make wudu with snow. You're allowed to. But if you don't know the fara'id of wudu, and you only know like the form that incorporates all of it, the sunnahs as well, it's not that doing the sunnahs is a problem, but the fard parts of wudu are everything other than your mouth and your nose, and the number of times in the Hanafi school, like the order is not considered like a fard, right? In other schools it is. So what are these guys gonna do? They're making wudu in the snow in Central Park. Are they gonna be gargling with the snow? Are they gonna be shoving it up their nostrils? No, and you could say, well, that sounds silly, but what if they don't know? And then at the end, they're gonna be like, this religion is so hard, I'm putting snow in my nose, right? But if you know it, and it doesn't take a lot to know it, do you know? If you know it, then you know how to maneuver and adapt in situations. Does that make sense? And it subsides anxiety, which for a lot of us is at an all-time high. And it makes it that much harder then to find like centeredness, right? When the hadith says like there's no prayer when food is served, doesn't mean you don't pray, but if there's like an entire meal on the table and you're like trying to pray next to it, you're gonna definitely be, as you were saying, it's one thing to smell bad stuff, but everything smells great and your mind is wandering, you're like, I wanna eat that chicken right now, right? Then you're distracted in the prayer. That's not establishing it well. Do you see what I mean? Does that make sense? We can apply these things to these remaining categories also, right? Wa'itai zakah, that you are giving the zakah. There's a link here, always you see in the Quran, like there's a right to God, the establishment of salah, and then there's an engagement ritually of God's creation, the giving of charity. You know, they always go hand, even in different constructs, right? We were praying Maghrib today, and you read Surah Kawthar, right? Fasalli li rabbika wanhar, right? So then make salah for your Lord, wanhar, and do the nahr, right? Which is the sacrifice. What happens when you do the ritual slaughter around the days of Eid? You distribute the meat to people in need. So there's prayer to God, and there's service of God's creation, right? I would assume, and I say it with love, that most of you in this room don't know the rules of zakat. You should learn them. It's not like difficult. The bar to entry in our religion is not up here, it's down here. And the things that everyone is supposed to do tend to not be so complex. But if you're only seeking to learn it the one time of the year that it's obligatory upon you to do it, you're not going to get into a place where you have a rhythm. And then it stops being a spiritual act. In order for these to be spiritual acts, the mechanics have to be seen as a means. So many of us grow up learning how to pray because everybody's got to pray. Not everybody gives zakah. It's only if you get past a certain threshold of wealth. But you should still know the rules of it. And you want to engage in it so that there's an understanding of the how-tos that enable it to be now a spiritual vehicle, right? The idea that this wealth is not even mine. It's already owed to somebody else. And it's the minimum of what it is that I'm giving to someone. There's all kinds of things we're going to do. We would have done it already, but may Allah grant ease to the people of Palestine. A lot of our programming shifted with the escalated violence in the last month. But workshops on zakah, helping people to learn it a little bit more. There's a ton of things that you could look at online. Imam Tahir Anwar, who's a really great sheikh, mashallah, he's got a video on YouTube that's called From Stocks to Livestock, the Fiqh of Zakah. It's like an hour. Just listen to it. It'll give you kind of a foundational understanding. And then listen to it a few times, do you know? So you're building a relationship with it. We had a woman in our community who came after Ramadan. She's a survivor of abuse. She had really difficult life. She left from her abuser, mashallah, and went into the government shelter system. It's a really terrible experience for her. a lot of challenges, and she was married at a young age, came from an immigrant, like, South Asian background, was married, no, like, resume, job, like, experience, etc. After Ramadan, she came to see me, and this was way back where we were still, like, collecting cash and giving cash out. It's not, like, a good system whatsoever, do you know? But the IC, for those who don't know, has grown a lot in a short period of time. And we started out when I was, you know, in the basement of churches and whatever else. There were certain things we were doing that probably in retrospect we shouldn't have done. So after Ramadan, like, there's the charity, the Zakat al-Fitr, right? $10 per person in your family. And we were collecting like tens and thousands of this in cash. You see how many people come out here to pray in Washington Square Park, and they're giving this cash. We'd collect it, and then people would come who were in need, and we'd give it to them. This woman, who was a survivor of abuse, I gave her about $3,000 or $4,000 in cash in an envelope. And then she handed it right back to me. And I said, do you not need this? And she says, no, I need it. I just don't know what I'm supposed to do with it. I've never had a credit card. I don't know how to open up a bank account. I don't know how to pay for a cell phone bill. She said, you keep it and you tell me what I'm supposed to do with it, right? Understanding her as a beneficiary necessitates understanding her as a whole individual. When you can build a relationship with the categories of zakat recipients, and you can think about just how deeply wise it is that these are the people who should be recipient of our zakat, it's not just a mindless act of writing a check, or to get to a place where I try to look for loopholes to see, do I owe this or I do not owe this? She's a whole person. She needs an entire system that understands her existence, that gets her out of a place to a place where she's entitled to live to her fullest, right? It's why we started shelters in our community. This is why now post-COVID, we want to get back into the habit, food insecurity, clinics, these kinds of things. Do you know? So, itai zakah, like, this is a foundation. If you do not have it, there's no foundation to your Islam. Like, the house is built on a faulty base. It's not going to work. Hajj al-Bayt comes now, right? The pilgrimage to the house, we're taught that this is done if you have the means to do so. Same thing. Salah, everybody's got to do salah. My father, who had a severe stroke some years ago, was paralyzed on the right side of his body. He still performs his prayers as he can. There's videos of people from Gaza that should not be undermined. May Allah grant them ease. Of individuals who are strapped to hospital beds and they're still praying just through movements of their eyes. Do you know? But that's what you do. Like, you do it to the best of your capacity. Hajj, you do if you have the means to do. You have the means to do it. That means that's when it's incumbent upon you. The means is financial. Someone can pay for you to go. And that is totally fine. The means is also, right? Like, say I was the caretaker of my father who is in a physical state where he needs support. I cannot leave him and go for Hajj. Does that make sense? Right? So the means is not only, but does also include financial capacity as well as other capacities. I've gone for Hajj and Umrah, and I see women who are immigrant from all over the world. People literally pack up all of their stuff and they go on this pilgrimage. It's not something you do just when you are elderly. That's not how it works. It's something you do when you have the means to do it. And the means to do it is what is the prerequisite. Better to go when you're younger than not. I went for Hajj when I was 22 years old, right? And for me, I was starting to work here. I went with the intention of asking Allah to put barakah in whatever it is that gets done here. Do you know? And when I was on the ground there, I was like, thank God I'm doing this when I'm 22. Because if I was doing this when I was like 52 or 72, I don't know, it would be just a totally different experience, right? It's like the equivalent of, I got to figure out a place to pray with 3 minutes left in this building that I've never even thought about it, you know? Your body's going to hurt. Everything's going to hurt. It's a lot of walking. You do it when you're younger and you have the means to do it. Do you know what I mean? Hajj al-Bayt, this is a foundation, right? And then the Saum of Ramadan, the fasting of Ramadan. There's a lot more Muslims who fast than pray. Do you know? And it's a very passive act. You don't have to do anything when you fast. You can literally just sit and do nothing, and you have fasted. You could sleep all day in your room, and you fasted. Like, it, you can do it. That's what you do. Should you do it that way? Probably not, right? But it's not an active mode of engagement. It's a passive thing. And there's all other kinds of things that are going on in Ramadan. The barakah is undeniable. But the same way, we're breaking down. What are like the incentives and the gains from praying in congregation, having a qibla, these kinds of things? You want to bring awareness to your practice of Ramadan, even prior to or after the fact, so that it doesn't go just with ease after it's done. Like, why are you excited when Ramadan comes? What are the things that are happening there? You start to bring organs of cognition into the practice, so it becomes a firm, concrete practice, right? And if you have the ability to fast, then you think about it. Just like zakat is something that is the entry point and the minimum, then you give more on top of it. You enjoy the experience of reading Quran in Ramadan, fasting in Ramadan, fast outside of Ramadan. What's keeping you from doing it? Do you know? And then the discipline of salah becomes important. Because if you have the discipline to get these things done 5 times a day, it's going to just create more sheer will and determination, irada. That's what these people go off of. The doctors going into these hospitals, knowing fully that a bomb might bring the hospital down, but they're still going and still smiling to their patients. They just have like will and determination that's remarkable, mashallah. That's what they're going off of, sheer will and determination. You have this inside of you too. You just have to tap into it and exert it and say, hey, why would I not do it? These days are great because Fajr is not so early and Maghrib is super early. So you got fast to make up, do it with a double intention that you're also going to make dua for the alleviation of oppression, of oppressed peoples. Doesn't have to just be about you, which is the thing I'm going to pause on at the end here. You got to understand that these foundational things, as much as they're individual obligations, you can look at them through a prism of selfless worship. I can't make dua for you when you ask me to and willfully still just engage in haram regularly. And so when someone asks me, like, what brings you to certain things, the love I have for the community I serve, the love I have for other people I love, friends and family, become an amazing preventative mechanism from engaging in things that would impact the presence and kind of elevation of my prayer. And when you can bring intentionality to it that says, my fajr is not just for me, but my fajr is for the person sitting next to me, it's for the little kid who is not going to see his parents in this world again, that is sitting in a open-air prison, then my zakat is not just about me, but it's about the recognition of a global population that is in just dire straits, right? Afghan refugees getting sent back to Afghanistan from Pakistan after an earthquake has hit, destabilized country, all kinds of tumultuous realities. Sudan, 200 plus days into its current conflict. Myanmar, the Rohingya, you have Uyghurs in China, you have people in Palestine, Kashmir, all over India. There's no shortage of things that we could list out in terms of why your zakat cannot be just about mindless writing of things, but it's got to be a spiritual act. It's a spiritual vehicle. Do you know? Where is your heart in this? Where is the love? Where is it not just about me fulfilling for me, but I'm thinking about it from the broader standpoint of the beneficiary? Hajj as well, right? If it's as soon as I have the means to do so, then it's not just about me. My fast of Ramadan, like, it's not just about me. Do you see what I mean? Okay, let's take 2 minutes. If you can turn to the person next to you, what are some of the things you're taking away from today's conversation? and then we'll wrap up, inshallah. But go ahead. Hey, assalamu alaikum. Okay. Is Officer Black there? Can you just give him the phone? Hey man, how are you? Hey, can you let her up? I'm gonna put her in the system. Okay. Thanks, man. Okay. What are some of the things we're taking away from today? Sorry, I knew that was super quick. Anything coming? Maybe a few quick takeaways before we wrap up. Yeah.
We talked about perfecting your salah.
Great. Anything else?
Preparing the head, for all of these acts, like salah, Ramadan, Hajj, like all of these acts, even if you're not ready or even if it's not time yet, just preparing the head helps a lot.
Yeah. Other things? Anything? Yeah.
That everything we do needs to have an intention.
Yeah. Amazing. Right. And these are things we've heard before, but we want to just think about them from different vantage points. Do you know? So next week, we'll get into the fourth hadith. If people want to just start looking at it and kind of getting acquainted with it. We have a lot of our same regular halakas happening this week. I think on Thursday, we're going to do another healing space. It's been a month since the most recent escalated violence in Gaza. Allah grant them ease. And so people want to just have a mark for that and let people know. There's other events that we're going to be starting as well. As I mentioned, at Jummah, like phone banking to call electeds around a ceasefire. We're going to do some Quran khatams, qiyams. We're going to have our post-Jummah lunch every Friday now for some time, just so people can be in community with each other and they're not alone. The iftar is on Mondays and Thursdays. We're going to try to reorient some of how we do those as well as just as like communal gatherings. I know it's earlier in the day, but if you can make it out, try to come to those as well. But a lot of it we'll start pushing out on our email list tomorrow, if not the day after. On Friday, we're going to do a program in here that anyone can attend. But we're going to entitle it Navigating Palestine as a Convert, where we have a large convert community, alhamdulillah. It can become like a difficult times conversation. Family is not so well aware of Islam. They're consuming media that becomes really hard to kind of distill, you know, why would you join this religion? Like, what do these things mean? There's a lot that goes on there. So if you or someone you know would benefit from that conversation, we're going to do that here at around 6 or 6:30 on Friday night, inshallah. On Saturday, there's an all-day seminar that we're hosting with the Al-Maghrib Institute that's called Angels and Demons with Sheikh Walid Basuni. And I think there's about 40 seats left. I think they've had 200 some people register. So if you want to go to that, I think we advertise some of it on our mailing list also. Okay, so let's take a pause here, and then we'll see everybody next Monday, inshallah. Yeah, assalamu alaikum.